Actually. He drew the word out and managed to make it sound inappropriate. Some part of Vega wondered what he was getting at. Are we flirting now? She thought. Well, okay then, Evan Marsh. I will be whoever you goddamn well want me to be. I think it's probably random. Someone with an odd sense of humor. That doesn't mean I won't look into it. I appreciate it. You know, for my mom. He wiped the water off his face, and his hand lingered there, over his cheek. Vega looked at his hand and saw a series of fresh scratches, vertical on his forearm. He dropped his hand to his side, and she grabbed him by the wrist. He didn't pull it back. His skin was warm. "You have a cat?" she said, turning his hand up, showing him the scratches.
"Roommate's got two," he said.
He let his knuckles rest on her wrist, held her eyes. She let go and smiled, tried to picture herself younger and lighter. "How are you not freezing out here?" she said. He looked back over his shoulder at the loading dock.
"Hard labor, Alice," he said. "It's a bitch."
"I thought you said your shift hadn't started yet." Evan flinched only a little bit, smiled and started backing up toward the loading dock. He held his arms out and called,
"Guess I'm just warm-blooded."
Cap leaned against his car and watched two kids, a boy and girl, probably 4 years old or so, turn dizzy spirals on a small steel merry-go-round. One of their mothers sat on a bench texting on her phone and smoking. She seemed young, and it momentarily concerned Cap, made him think, why aren't her eyes on the kids? A blue mid-sized sedan pulled up across the street, and Junior Hollows stepped out, nodded to Cap, and jogged over.
"Twice in 24 hours," he said. "That's twice as many times as I've seen you in the past 3 years."
Cap shrugged.
"Unusual 24 hours. "What's this about, Cap? You want to explain to me what you have to do with my case?"
"I'm working it."
"You're working it? From your rec room?" Junior said, amused. "Alice Vega hired me. I'm working with her."
Junior's smile dissipated, and for a rare moment Cap could see the age lines around his mouth, ironed creases in a napkin.
"You really think that's a good idea?" said Junior.
"Yeah, I do. The more hands, the better."
Junior laughed and shook his head, weary.
"Would you ever say that as a cop? Would you ever have wanted PIs up in your shit? Come on, Cap."
"If they could help my investigation, yes, yeah, I would."
"And how can you and Alice Vega help me exactly?"
"I have Kylie Brandt's diary."
Junior's eyes got a little bigger. Then he tried to look cool about it.
"Kylie Brandt didn't have a diary."
"Says who?"
"Her mother."
"In what universe are you operating where girls don't keep secrets from their mothers?"
"We've been through Jamie Brandt's apartment," said Junior. "It's the size of a shoebox. We didn't find a diary."
"Kylie didn't keep it at the apartment. It was at a friend's house."
"The friend gave it to you?"
"Yes."
Junior shrugged with cynicism.
"What makes you think the friend didn't make it up for the attention?"
"Jamie Brandt's ex-boyfriend says Kylie told him about it. That's how we found it."
Cap watched Junior process it.
"You have it here," Junior said,
nodding to Cap's car.
"Yeah. Also, you got an email recently about Nolan Marsh?"
Junior shook his head no, a reflex.
"I know," said Cap, fatigued by the exchange. "You don't know what I'm talking about." "Okay. Let's say the DPD received an email about a guy named Nolan Marsh. Alice Vega got the same email."
Junior stopped shaking his head, just listened.
"She had it traced to the Kinkos on North Haven. I don't want to tell you how to do your job, but maybe you want to send someone over there?"
They both stood there. Cap let his eyes drift to the kids on the merry-go-round, the boy dragging his foot along the ground, slowing it down.
"All right, Cap," said Junior. "What do you want for all this? For the diary?"
Just the open exchange of information. You don't want to work with us, fine. But at least we can all have the same facts. Like witness statements, for example.
I have to check with Trainer, said Junior. Then came a big sigh.
You know he likes it clean.
Cap nodded. He knew Junior wasn't necessarily lying. The chief of police liked detail and transparency. He kept a 20-year medallion from Alcoholics Anonymous in a frame next to the picture of his kids. The files in his file cabinet were alphabetized and color-coded, the post-its stacked in towers from large to small on his desk. Cap knew for a fact there was a canister of Lysol wipes in his bottom right drawer. The only thing worse than telling Nell and Jules about his resignation was facing Chief Trainer, who was under the impression it really had been Cap who had let the junkie kid die.
Kaplan, I didn't think you had these kinds of fuck-ups in your blood, he'd said.
It hurt Cap like a sunburn. Light rain had started to fall. Junior wiped drops from the hair that hung over his forehead.
Fine, said Cap.
He went into his car and grabbed the book from the seat, shielded it under his jacket from the rain. Junior eyed it, and his lips twitched, like he was hungry and just a little too far from the dessert cart. Cap enjoyed the moment of cruelty, let his hand linger on the book before handing it over. Junior slid it under his coat.
Thanks, he said, blinking from the rain.
He ran his hand over his face and shook it out.
I'm glad you called. It was the right thing.
Cap stared at Junior, thought maybe it was not at all the right thing. Then they heard screaming. It was the little boy from inside the playground. He'd fallen off the merry-go-round and hit the rubber playground mat headfirst.
God damn it, Cap said.
He ran into the playground as the mother got up from the bench and went to the boy, not in a rush.
Hey!
He shouted to the mother. He could feel his ears getting hot. She turned to Cap as she leaned over the boy and helped him stand up. Cap put her age at 21 or 22. She had the face of a girl.
Listen, ma'am. There are 3 entrances to this playground. One of them leads to a street where people frequently run the stop sign, and either of these kids could have run out there at any time. And I've been standing here a full 15 minutes, a strange man just watching your children play, and you haven't looked up from Candy Crush. Just watch the goddamn kids. That is your only priority.
Cap's hands started to shake, so he stuffed them into his pants pockets. The mother sneered and said,
Hey, mind your own fucking business, all right? He's fine.
Cap and the boy stared at each other for a minute, the boy with a couple of tears on his pink cheeks, both of them breathing heavy.
Is he lying? Vega asked as Cap drove them down a 4-lane state highway.
He could be, said Cap. He's a liar generally.
No one lies all the time unless there's a compulsion.
I don't think that's the case. He just lies to cover his ass like the rest of us, said Cap.
Vega's eyes wandered to the signs of small businesses flashing past, a.k.a. copier service, personal appearances hair salon, Route 61 bar and grill.
You don't, she said.
I don't. Well, Vega, I can't really imagine the situation where you'd need to cover your ass for any reason.
Then you have a limited imagination, Kaplan, she said, turning to him. So what's the takeaway?
He might help us, and he might not. Trainer, the chief, might help us. Might not.
So we keep going our own way, said Vega.
Yeah. What was Marsh's brother like?
Strange. He's hiding something, but I don't know what. I asked him to imagine why he thought someone would send that email, and he had a theory.
What was it?
That his brother and the Brandt girls were taken by the same person.
So who's the sender of the email?
Next-door neighbor, guilty accomplice, doesn't matter. Point of it is, he'd thought about it, while his mother was completely hard-pressed for an idea.
So, said Cap, taking the exit for Raven Run. You think that's suspicious?
He also was a little out of it, running his words together, she said, remembering. Without thinking, she touched her lips and said, "Warm."
"Huh?"
said Cap. He was really warm. We were outside in the rain a good 10 minutes. Temperatures probably 40 degrees. He had short sleeves and was warm.
"Drugs?"
"Seems most likely," she said. She thought for a moment and turned her body to face Cap. "How much trouble you think it would be to find out what happened to Nolan Marsh?" she said. Cap blew air through his lips in an O.
3-year-old cold case? Missing vulnerable adult with no viable leads?"
"We don't know we have no viable leads."
"Look, Rawls may be Junior's errand boy, but he knows what he's doing. If he couldn't find Nolan 3 years ago, chances are it's a lost cause."
Vega reared back like she'd been pushed. "Tell that to his mother."
"Hey," said Cap, "I don't like it, but I know that's how it is."
"You do too," he said quietly. "So what if it is related to the girls? Then it's not just an exercise."
"No evidence either way," said Cap.
Then, suddenly, he looked discouraged.
"But we have to explore every branch of the tree," he muttered.
"Explore every branch of the tree?" said Vega. "Did you see that on a motivational poster?" Cap glanced back and forth between her and the road.
"I'm sorry, Vega. Are you making a joke at my expense? Do you actually have a sense of humor?"
She ignored him, tapped her knuckles against the window, said, "I think we have to put both cases side by side and see what the connection is. Nobody writes an email like that without a motive."
"Fine," said Cap. "When we're in bed with Junior and Trainer and Rawls, we can ask for the file on Nolan. Until then, can we focus on WT?
"Sure. Can you think about more than one thing at once?" She was honestly not trying to be difficult. Cap seemed to know that and said,
"Why, sure."
The very corner of his mouth turned up. And Vega thought if that corner ate all its vegetables, one day it could grow into a real smile. They found Jamie Brandt in front of a Kmart talking to a blonde woman in a windbreaker with a Fox 29 logo on the back. There was a man loading equipment into the back of a van and a small group of people handing out flyers. The sun was just about down. A tall, older woman who Cap thought had a slight hunchback came up to them.
"So?"
she said to Vega, indignant.
"Any news?"
"Not yet," said Vega, who seemed to know her. "We need to talk to Jamie."
"Who's the we?"
the woman said, nodding to Cap.
"Max Kaplan," said Cap.
"This is Jamie's mother, Gail White," said Vega to Cap. Then she turned to Gail and added, "I've hired him as a consultant. He's a former police officer."
"Good thing you're a former," said Gail. "Talk about a bunch of ignorance. Your IQ probably went up 50 points when you walked out the door."
Cap couldn't help smiling. He liked Gail White.
"I'll get her for you. She just did an interview with Hallie Summers from Fox in Philly. She's just trying to make her cry again, asking her the same dumbass questions."
Gail seemed to be one of those people who said things without expecting or needing a response. She left then and went to Jamie, who saw Vega and Cap and started to run, saying something in haste to the woman from the news.
"What is it? Anything?" she said.
She was puffy-eyed, and her skin was dry, flaking around her temples and her mouth. Her hair was wet from the rain. She didn't have an umbrella and didn't seem to notice. Cap knew the hours were stacking up on her, and soon she would take the slow turn from despair to mourning.
"No," said Cap, "but we have to check something with you. Will you step over to my car?"
"Yeah, Maggie made these,"
she said, handing them soggy flyers. On each were the most recent school photos of Kylie and Bailey, their stats and the word missing at the bottom of the page.
"Kylie did have a diary. She kept it at Cole's house," said Cap.
"What? Really? Where is it?"
she said, panicky, stretching her neck so she could look into Cap's car.
"We gave it to the police, but we have pictures."
Cap held his umbrella over the women as Vega showed Jamie her phone, the image of the last page of the diary. Jamie squinted. Her breath sped up.
That's her writing! That's how she does letters!
Good, said Cap. Do you know who W.T. is?
No,
she said.
Maybe a boy in a class?
We checked the class list, said Vega. Only one W, Wesley McPherson. No W.T.
Anyone come to mind? William, Walker, Wayne?
Jamie pressed her hand to her forehead, as if she were applying a compress.
No, I can't think of anyone, she said. Fuck, why can't I think of anyone?
It might not be an obvious person. We'll check everyone in the school, every class, teachers.
The police are following their leads, too.
You think this W.T. had something to do with it?
Said Jamie. It's an idea. She wrote some notes about him in the diary, too. Vega scrolled so Jamie could see the initials.
Shit, she said. Who the fuck is he?
Cap's phone buzzed, and he handed the umbrella to Vega and stepped away. He saw M's name come up, and he picked up.
M. Hey, Cap, can you meet? Said M under his breath. Yeah, when? 15 minutes? The luncheonette? Yeah. Everything okay? Yeah, got something for you.
Cap heard something different in his voice. When M had first started at the department, he'd been all cocky frat boy. Maybe a little too enthusiastic when pinning and cuffing a suspect, calling the rest of the guys bitches when they went home early from drinking after a second shift. If they needed someone to sit on an amped-up PCP freak, they'd send M, who didn't care if he got black eyes and chipped teeth before holidays. Then he got his girlfriend pregnant. Then she was his wife, and she got pregnant again, the second time with twins. Then M was tamed because it was simple, Cap knew. Because he had the fear. Because he had 3 kids and a wife, and a whole life he could fuck up. But just now he heard it. The old M, the one who made a prank call to Junior and pretended to be a hooker.
Oh, yeah? Said Cap, smiling into the phone. Can I have a hint? It's bigger than a bread box. Great. See you soon.
Cap hung up and looked back to the women. Jamie stared at the image of her daughter's phantom handwriting on the phone. Vega met Cap's eyes and saw something there. She sniffed. A fox sniffing out a jackrabbit. Vega ran a napkin over a smear of ketchup left on the table by the previous customer. She sat next to Cap in a booth, and Wiley Emerson was opposite them, breathing heavily and perspiring. Rain streaked up the window next to them.
"Here you go," said M, sliding a white envelope across the table toward Cap.
Vega placed her palm gently on top of it, intercepting it, and picked it up, opened the flap. Cap raised his hands in surrender. "All you."
"I didn't include the ones that didn't see anything or from the Kmart or anything. These are just the people from the parking lot."
"3," said Vega.
"That's it. It was a slow day over there, I guess."
"Are they consistent?" asked Cap.
"More or less. One of the witnesses is an 80-something man. Some of his stuff doesn't make sense, but there's a type there. You'll see it. Caucasian male teenager, baseball hat and sweatshirt."
"Car?" said Vega.
"Tan, white, beige, compact."
"3 witnesses, 3 colors, she said.
"Yeah, no one saw plates."
"No one ever sees plates," said Cap.
"So they couldn't see his face," said Vega. "Because of the hat."
"None of them got a good look, no."
"Who took the statements?" said Cap.
"Rawls and Harrison."
"The word's getting out?"
"Every cop in Pennsylvania has the description, but they can't pull over every tan, white, or beige vehicle on the street."
Cap nodded. M tapped all his fingers on the table and bounced back and forth on the seat a little bit.
"I better get back. I told Junior I needed some coffee that didn't taste like cat shit."
"Thanks for doing this," Cap said. "What changed your mind?"
M exhaled loudly and said,
"I'm just thinking about it. Went home to my kids, you know. Jake's the same age as the little Brant girl, and I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Why not? Why fucking not? Let's get this thing by the fucking nuts, right? He said, looking at Cap.
Ben DeVega, excuse me. Talk about nuts all you want, she said.
Did Trainer bring in a Fed?
Yeah, his name's Cartwright. He just came in this morning and been locked up with the chief.
Cap nodded, said,
look, I shared some information with Junior earlier. We might all be working together real soon.
Good. That's good, right?
Yeah, right. Thanks, Em.
Em grinned, looking a little dopey. He turned to Vega, waiting on something, like he'd asked her a question that she hadn't answered yet. She stared back, unsure of what he wanted. She glanced at Cap, who made some eye rolls in Em's direction.
Oh, thanks, she said.
My pleasure, said Em. I'm gonna go. Nice to meet you, Miss Vega, he said, standing up from the booth. Talk soon, Cap.
Then he headed for the door. He grabbed a toothpick from a dispenser on the counter on the way out and stuck it in his mouth like a cowboy. Vega watched him out the window for a second longer as he walked through the parking lot while she handed the envelope to Cap.
Please, thank you. Please, thank you. Please, thank you, she thought, because it helped to practice.
A half hour later, they were at Cap's house, their notes and the statements spread out on the kitchen table. Cap put on a pot of coffee and then winced and shook a finger at Vega.
I don't have tea, he said.
I'm fine, said Vega, looking over the pages.
So, three people, said Cap. Rachel Simmons, 23, getting into her car after returning a Blu-ray player at Best Buy, notices the girls crossing the street, sees one of them hug a boy, presumably the driver, wearing a white baseball hat and light-colored sweatshirt. Girls get into the car, which she thinks is tan. Doesn't think anything strange about it. Thinks the girl and boy must be boyfriend and girlfriend.
Carl Crane, said Vega, 45, loading baseball equipment into the back of his truck with his son. He sees the girls cross the highway and thinks, where are their parents? Then sees the bigger one hug a Caucasian male dressed in a gray sweatshirt and white baseball hat. They get into the car and drive away. Son doesn't see anything.
And Roy Eldridge, 87, as he's being driven by his niece out of the mall parking lot onto the highway, sees a boy hug a girl. Then he says two girls get in the car with Harry. Rawls asks who Harry is. The niece says Harry is Eldridge's son. Eldridge is old and confused. Thinks the boy in the baseball hat is his son.
Or looks like his son. And the niece didn't see the boy or the girls.
Right.
It doesn't say anything about what Harry looks like, said Vega, staring straight ahead.
No, but the niece wouldn't necessarily know that. May not be relevant either. Eldridge is almost 90 and prone to bouts of...
Cap looked back at the statement and read, disorientation and aphasia.
We could still check. All of them. See if their memory's been jogged at all since they talked to Rawls.
She took a deep breath and tapped her fingers on the table.
Maybe he didn't write everything down, either.
It's a possibility, said Cap,
his phone buzzing in his pocket.
They were probably rushing, trying to talk to everyone at the mall, who might have seen something. That's a lot of statements to take, and only two police.
Cap looked at his phone. A text from Nell. Have you seen the news? Break in your case. Turn on 6.
What is it? Said Vega.
Nell, my daughter, says there's a break in the case.
Cap went to the living room and dug the remote out from the couch, turned on the TV, and stood there with his arms folded. There was footage of a boy, a teenager, long-limbed and lanky, being led out of a cruiser, a sweatshirt pulled up over his face, and up the steps of the station. Cap recognized most of the cops standing on the steps, waving off the press like mosquitoes. Rawls guided the boy through the front doors.
"Brought in for questioning this evening," said the anchor woman. The police are releasing no information about the underage suspect, except to say they have reason to believe he may know the whereabouts of Kylie and Bailey Brandt. The image cut back to the anchor people with their moderately concerned expressions and moderately detached commentary. The woman said, "Kylie and Bailey Brandt were last seen at the Ridgewood Mall on Sterling Road East and Highway 61 last Saturday morning. If you have any information regarding their whereabouts, please call your local authorities. Scott?" Scott had a downcast sort of look and said thoughtfully,
"Terrible."
Then a pause.
"A Reading man pleaded guilty to 2 counts of homicide this morning."
Cap muted it. He turned to Vega, who had the phone pressed to her ear.
"Who are you calling?"
"Jamie Brandt." Vega's eyes focused as she listened to a voice on the other end.
"Why?"
she said into the phone. Then she pulled it from her head and tapped it, held it out in front of her.
"That's Sonny Thomas," said Jamie's voice,
sharp and strained on the speaker. "The boy who lives in your apartment complex," said Vega.
"Jamie, it's Max Kaplan. Why would the police want him? Did you tell them anything about Sonny you maybe forgot to tell us?"
Cap said, feeling his heart rate speed up. Something about it wasn't right, he knew, but it was useless to try to pin it down now. "What's Sonny short for?" said Vega, staring at Cap.
"What?"
said Jamie, distracted, her mother's voice in the background.
"Sonny," said Cap. "The name, is it short for something?"
"Son of a bitch," said Jamie, realizing. "It's Wilson! Wilson Thomas!"
Jamie said she had to go and hung up on them.
"Why did we cross him off our list again?"
said Cap, agitated. Jamie didn't think he was a viable candidate. He shook his head to some internal rhythm.
"You have a lot of experience letting your clients call the shots?"
he said with an edge. "Only when their arguments make sense," said Vega. "How would a 15-year-old who lived a few doors down from the Brants coordinate the abduction, stash the girls somewhere, and then keep showing up at home, business as usual?"
"It's possible," said Cap.
"Not probable," said Vega.
"The kidnapper is someone who's not probable," said Cap. "Otherwise it would be obvious who he is."
"Did M call you back yet?" Cap glanced at his phone.
"No."
"Then we can't do anything. Junior's going to want Sonny alone in a room before his mother can get a lawyer to him. He's not going to call in the witnesses until tomorrow midday at the earliest. Let's talk to them first." Vega watched Cap as he chewed on his lips. He looked at his watch.
"We can't knock on their doors now," he said.
"Probably not," said Vega. "But we can call. Set it up for first thing before they go to work." Cap bit his lip and nodded mechanically, all his pissiness replaced by fatigue. "I'll call them," said Vega, closing her laptop, tucking it under her arm. "I'll be here at 7. I'll park across the street so your neighbor can walk his cat." She saw the first curl of a smile on him before she left, before he had a chance to say anything, probably either thanks or okay, muttered into the empty space of his living room. She held her breath, all of her abdominal muscles hugging the organs, stretching her legs up to the ceiling. Fingers out. Their duck feet. Their oven mitts. The idea was that it should be all parts working equally, but that was for Indian gurus and vegan socialites. Vega's was circus yoga, a magic trick, and it always felt like there was one thing pushing harder than anything else. Today, it was her forearms. Vega knew it was her body making the selection. Her core was weak from riding around in a car for so many hours, shoulders stiff from pulling Brandon Haas across the parking lot. But a skittering bug in her brain told her it was for a reason. The forearms are active, because you will need them more today. Then her phone began to hum on the table, moved toward the edge like it was drawn by a magnet. Vega felt a strange, predatory affection for it. "Come here, little thing. Come closer." Chapter 8. Rachel Simmons lived in her parents' garage in Black Creek. It was a large room with one small window near the ceiling, facing out onto a balding lawn. She sat in between Cap and Vega and squinted at Vega's phone, at the picture of Sonny Thomas that Jamie had sent. In the picture, Sonny was wearing a floppy beanie with a ball on top and an oversized T-shirt. He was leaning to the side, hugging Kylie.
I don't know, said Rachel. I mean, I was in the parking lot, you know. This all happened across the highway.
Vega tapped on Sonny's face to zoom. Cap thought he looked like a TV show's idea of a teenager. Unthreateningly handsome, check. Mild acne, check. Nearly imperceptible smirk, check.
Yeah, I really didn't see his face, said Rachel.
But it's possible this was him, said Vega.
I guess so, she said.
Is there anything else you can remember, said Vega. Anything that stands out at all? Rachel picked a piece of lint off her jeans with her long fingernail, painted blue.
I was far away, she said, turning her head from Vega to Cap. I'm real sorry. I just got one little look.
She frowned, her face framed by frizzy blonde hair, her eyes big and shaky, and Cap could do nothing but believe her. Carl Crane kept them on the porch. He was a big man with a belly and a buzz cut. He closed the screen door behind him and was panting, like he'd been rushing.
"Kids are getting ready for school," he said by way of explanation.
"That's fine," said Vega. "We only need a minute of your time." He smiled at her awkwardly, and then looked past her to Cap and said,
"I saw on the news they got him. They got the guy who took those girls."
"Women get hellos," Vega thought. "Men get business."
"Not quite," said Cap. "They've only brought someone in for questioning."
"Do you recognize this boy?" said Vega, and she held up her phone to Carl Crane's face. He peered over the phone and said to Cap,
"Is this him? Is this the kid?"
Vega turned around to look at Cap, too.
"Yes, he's the one the police have brought in," said Cap reluctantly.
"I know I was across the street," said Carl, "but this is him."
"Your statement says he was wearing a hat that covered his face," said Vega. Carl looked at her sideways, confused, either by her asking questions about the case or by her speaking words at all. He responded to Cap, as if Cap had asked him the question.
"Yeah, but he was tall and skinny like that. You know, long-armed. You think they're going to bring me in to do a lineup?"
He put his hands on his hips and cleared his throat, as if he were preparing to identify someone in a lineup at that moment. He rocked back and forth on his feet.
"Possibly," Cap answered him over Vega's head. "They have all your contact information, correct?"
"Yes, sir,"
said Carl,
as if his contact information were a great source of pride.
"I'm sure they'll be in touch," said Cap.
Vega said nothing, stood between them, like a dumb little ghost. As soon as they got in the car, Cap started the engine and said,
"Look, some guys around here only want to talk to other guys about anything substantive. I don't like it, but that's the way it is."
"Sure," said Vega. "You do a decent impression of one of those guys." Now she had offended him. He took his hands off the wheel and turned to her.
"No. Hey, give me a small break, Vega. I was trying to get information and move to the next thing."
"Then let's move to the next thing. My lead."
"All yours."
"You don't have to be so fucking supportive," said Vega. "You can just let me work." Cap shrugged.
"Fine."
They didn't speak until they got to the last witness on the list. A woman named Alyssa Mosier let them in, but was anxious about it. She wore a chunky wool sweater with a large spiral pattern on it. Her face was covered with freckles like a girl, though Cap put her age at about 50.
"I keep going back in time in my head, wishing I'd turned around and seen something that could help you," she said. "You have to understand, my uncle isn't well. We told the police. I don't know what you could get by interviewing him again."
He seemed to remember a few things when he gave his statement, said Vega, not combatively.
Good days, bad days, she said, looking sad. He used to be so funny, is all, she added, as if to explain her sadness.
He said the suspect looked like Harry, said Vega. Alyssa gave them a wounded smile.
Harry was my cousin, Uncle Roy's son. He died in Vietnam in 1970.
I'm sorry, Cap and Vega said at the same time.
He gets confused. He keeps thinking he sees people who have died. His parents, my aunt who passed 4 years ago, said Alyssa.
What about Harry, said Vega. Does he think he sees Harry?
Sure, sometimes.
Do you have any pictures of him? Asked Vega.
Who?
Said Alyssa, confused. Your cousin, Harry.
Yes, sure. Just one moment.
She left the room, and Cap looked to Vega. His look said, so what's the point of this now? Alyssa Mosier came back with a photo in a chipped gold frame.
This is him and me, she said, smiling. He was 5 years older than me, and I just loved him to pieces.
Cap and Vega came to her side and examined the picture. It had that muted color of photos from the 60s, like the film was developed in murky water. There was a little girl, 12 or 13, wearing a headband and a denim dress, smiling with a mouthful of braces at the camera. She leaned against a boy who looked like a man, tall and burly, with a healthy head of hair and a respectable mustache. "This is Harry," said Vega.
"Yeah, that's him," Alyssa said. "Course, when he went to Vietnam, they cut his hair and everything."
"He was a big guy?" said Cap.
"Oh, yeah. Over 6 foot."
She paused, eyes dulled in thought.
"He was 6'2" when he shipped out, and he was 6'3" when they shipped him back," she said. "Weird to think he grew an inch over there."
"He looks husky, too," said Cap.
"Made it to state for wrestling. All he would eat was bananas and peanut butter so he could bulk up."
They looked back down at the picture, at Harry Eldridge's honest smile.
"Roy Eldridge is the definition of an unreliable witness," said Cap in the car, determined to shred the morning's work to dust.
"I understand, but stack it up. Two witnesses claim Kylie hugged a skinny teenage boy, slight in build."
"The current suspect fits that profile," said Cap, sounding bored.
"Sure, but one witness describes a totally different body type."
"The witness has dementia."
"Stack it up. Let's just not forget it, that's all I'm saying," said Vega. Cap looked at her sideways. She could see the doubt in his face. "What do you want to do?" she said, tapping her hands on the dash. Conciliatory.
"We should have talked to the kid first. He should have been on the fucking list," said Cap through his teeth.
"He wasn't on the fucking list. Get over it. What do you want to do?" Cap rolled his head to the right. Vega heard a snap.
"I don't think Jamie's good for us right now," he said. "Her kids have been gone for 80 hours. She's cracking. She's gonna rip apart the first person who takes her off the leash."
"She wants to think the kid did it."
"Maybe the kid did do it," said Cap, raising his voice. "Maybe he killed them and dumped the bodies in the Beth Hill mine, and we've been chasing bullshit for the past 2 days.
We have to go back to Jamie."
"Are you listening to anything I'm saying?" said Cap. "Jamie's useless."
"We can get more detail about Sonny Thomas. We can tell her about the three witness descriptions and Nolan Marsh and see if anything pops. She might be the only person other than the kidnapper who knows where the girls are, and all we have to do is sift through the mud in her head a little bit." Vega paused and watched Cap rock side to side, settling in his seat. Think it over. He had a little conversation with himself, sighing theatrically and moving his lips, and when he started to shake his head at nothing in particular, she knew she had him beat. They climbed the exterior stairs of Jamie's complex to the second floor, brown boxes of apartments stacked up like kids' building blocks. Cap saw spider webs stringing from the corners of the stucco ceilings to the doorways, graffiti tags here and there. Vega was silent and stoic, and it pissed him off, made him think maybe there was less going on behind the mask as opposed to more. That maybe she wasn't a natural after all, just some delinquent who'd gotten lucky. They heard a muted series of thumps coming from inside. It reminded him of when he and Jules couldn't afford a drum set. Nell would practice on couch cushions and pillows. Then there was the shimmery crack of glass breaking. Cap bounded for the door.
"Jamie," he said loudly. "Jamie, it's Max Kaplan."
"It's open," she shouted.
Cap opened it, and they came into the living room, a small space with a mismatched couch and chairs, a large tube TV balanced precariously on an oblong table. To the right, the room opened up into a galley kitchen, a counter covered with stacks of glasses and plates, and some cabinets, all open. Jamie was on her hands and knees, holding two semicircles of glass, a thin ribbon of blood spreading on her hand. She stood and went to the sink, dropped the glass pieces with a crash, looking disgusted. She crossed in front of Cap and Vega and nodded at them.
"I'm glad you're here," she said,
weird and calm.
"You can help me look."
Her hand fluttered to her hair, pushing strands out of her face, smearing red on her forehead.
"Jamie," Cap said evenly, "you're bleeding."
She looked at her hand, distracted, then shook her head. "Look for what?" said Vega. Jamie ripped a paper towel off a roll on the kitchen counter and wrapped it around her palm.
"Anything," she said. "You found her diary in a goddamn tree. Who knows what else she has here? There's got to be something somewhere, something about Sunny, something."
Cap looked at her face, could tell she was thinking, calculating, but there was chaos in it, like she'd just gotten a concussion and was trying to do trigonometry.
"The police have been through here already, Jamie," said Cap.
"So what? You think they don't need help now? Isn't that what the fuck you two are for?"
she said, chewing her thumbnail.
"I already kicked Daryl out of here because he's totally frigging useless. I already been through their room. You can start in the bathroom if you want."
She stopped talking then, just went to the couch and started lifting up cushions, brushing coins to the carpet. Vega nodded at Cap, nudging him to the other room. Cap was thankful. Maybe Vega could get through to her, do a woman-to-woman thing, because she was so naturally sensitive. Cap shrugged it off and went into the next room, glad to have a break. Kylie and Bailey's room was sacked, the twin beds pulled apart, blankets and sheets in twisted piles on the floor, a white dresser with chipped edges, drawers open, and vines of brightly colored little girls' clothes spilling over the sides. Cap saw a pair of pink leggings. He remembered Nell wearing a lot of leggings when she was 8, 9 years old. He wanted to smell them, but felt like it would be disrespectful somehow, so he only touched them, lightly between his thumb and forefinger. They were unbelievably soft. The knees on them were worn, thready. They must be Bailey's, he thought. Still running, skinning knees.
"Fuck,"
he heard Jamie say from the other room.
"Oh, fuck. Fuck, motherfucker. Oh, fuck, fuck, fuck."
The fuck started low and throaty. Then they rose to alarm quickly until they were screams. Cap ran into the living room. Jamie was on the floor in front of the TV, DVDs scattered around her. Vega was closer and leaned down to her, grabbed her shoulders. "What is it? What's wrong?" Jamie looked up at them, her face all black lines, electric, furious. She held up a DVD, Pirates of the Caribbean.
"This fucking movie!"
She spat out the words like they were tobacco she'd been chewing.
"Guy in it named Will Turner. She's seen it a million times. That's WT. It's not Sonny Thomas. It's not anyone."
Cap's forehead tingled and burned. He put a hand up to it, felt the breath kicked out of his chest. Then his instinct came back, and he saw Jamie for what she was. An unstable element, a cut wire spraying sparks. She slapped her hands over her eyes. She must have liked the way that felt, because she did it again. Then she started hitting her face like her hands were fly swatters, first in a pitter-patter way, then harder until she knocked the heel of her hand into her nose and blood leaked from it. Cap jumped from where he stood to stop it, but Vega was closer and quicker. She clamped her arms around Jamie from behind and pulled her to a standing position.
"Let me go!"
Jamie yelled. She thrashed and twisted against Vega, who'd pinned Jamie's arms to her body. They were about the same height, Jamie and Vega, but Jamie's fury was nothing next to Vega's discipline.
"Call her mother," said Vega to Cap. "Let me go, bitch!"
Jamie screamed. Cap could see into the cave of her mouth, black and bottomless, as her eyes grew to globes, and he reached for his phone. She was in the bathroom vomiting when her mother arrived. Vega pressed a wet towel to the back of Jamie's neck and heard Gail White yelling at Cap. Jamie was weak, had gone for too many hours straight on pills and beer and coffee, and now her insides were kicking up like mud off tires. Gail burst into the bathroom, Cap behind her.
"All right, get the hell out of here," she said to Vega.
Vega stood back. Gail pushed her out of the way and knelt behind Jamie, whose head was lolling around on the toilet seat.
"A lot of fucking good you're doing, all of you," snapped Gail. "Just get out now! Go!"
Cap and Vega backed up and left. They walked through the scraps in the living room, and then Vega saw something.
"I'm calling Em," Cap announced, heading for the open door.
Vega stepped around DVDs like they were bombs and picked one up, examined the back of it. She stared at it and followed Cap without looking up. She heard him speak.
"Where is he?" "Okay, WT is a dead end. Jamie Brandt thinks it's from a movie."
Vega walked behind Cap, out the door, down the complex stairs and to his car. She ran her thumb over the front of the DVD and opened the case.
"Just have him call me if he wants to talk. Or he can talk to Jamie, but she's sick right now. Like sick, vomiting."
They got into Cap's car. Vega reached to the back seat and brought out her laptop, set it on her thighs.
"I'm saying you have no more leads. He's a character from a goddamn movie."
Cap's voice rose. He massaged the bridge of his nose. Vega slid the DVD into the laptop and turned down the sound.
"Sure, 15 minutes, he said, and hung up.
He bounced his fist on the top of the wheel.
"Em wants to meet at the diner. We have no reason to hide anything from him at this point. We all have shit."
Vega pressed fast forward on the movie, watched the picture jump and split.
"Yeah, okay."
Cap hung up and put his hands through his hair. He started the car.
"The hell are you doing?"
Vega didn't answer him. She had stopped the fast forward and was now watching the movie in real time. She pressed pause.
"Is this him?"
she said, pointing to an actor on the screen.
"Is this Will Turner?"
"I think so," said Cap, leaning over. "Yeah, it's not Johnny Depp. It's the kid."
Cap put his seatbelt on and began to pull the car out onto the road.
"What are you doing?" he said, more slowly.
She stared at the kid's face, the movie star, at his dark eyes generously spaced apart, delicate features, smooth skin. It had been hard to tell from the DVD case, but now, watching him move and speak, it was clear. She tapped her fingernail on the screen. "This kid looks exactly like Evan Marsh." Em was waiting for them in the same booth. He tapped a quarter on the table and hopped in his seat when he saw them. Vega slid in first, her laptop under her arm, Cap next to her.
"What's going on, Em?"
Em showed them what he was holding. Not a quarter, a flash drive. That for us? Vega said, opening the laptop.
Junior released Sonny Thomas an hour ago because they got nothing on him, said M.
Yeah, no shit, said Cap, nodding to the laptop screen, where the movie was frozen on the young actor's face.
Because that is Kylie's dream date. A fictional character in a goddamn movie.
M handed the flash drive to Vega, and she plugged it in. He stared at the screen.
I don't think I get it, he said.
The character's name is Will Turner. We all thought Kylie was writing about Wilson Thomas, but instead it's a guy who doesn't exist.
Shit, said M. It's this guy? What's his name? Rodrigo something?
Another video screen opened, the blurry chevrons of a security camera. Retail floor, a row of computers on a counter with one user, seated, back toward the camera.
You got the Kinko's footage, said Vega.
M pulled a finger gun on her and winked.
Give the lady a stuffed banana.
Cap leaned in for a closer look. The figure in the video stood up, tall, thin, wearing a sweatshirt with the hood pulled down over the top half of his face, bottom half a mess of static fuzz. He walked out of the frame. Vega pressed pause.
Could be Evan Marsh, she said.
Related to Nolan? Said M.
Vega nodded. His brother.
The guy working the register doesn't remember him, M added. We're trying to lift Prince. You want to lift Prince at a Kinko's? Cap said, incredulous. You're gonna get sludge from those keyboards.
Not impossible, said Vega.
Cap stared at her hair swept back into a neat ponytail at the base, two or three wisps draped across her cheek, as if she'd planned it that way. It enraged Cap suddenly, her arbitrariness. Some things neat and some things messy. Maybe there was no method here. He suddenly felt duped. Vega looked away from Cap and across to M now, suddenly on the same side.
Can we think about this critically for a second? Cap said to both of them. Where would Evan Marsh and Kylie Brandt meet? Where would they be in the same place at the same time? I don't know, said M, shrugging. Maybe the supermarket? That Giant's clear across town. Jamie Brandt would shop at the Walmart in Black Creek.
We can figure it out later, said Vega.
No, let's figure it out now, said Cap. I'm not chasing the invisible fucking man here.
Maybe, said M. Maybe that's not the right question.
Cap and Vega turned to him.
Oh, yeah, said Cap, laughing a little bit. All right, Stephen Hawking, you tell me what's the right question.
M scratched his chin and shifted his gaze to Vega. She raised her eyebrows. Go for it, kid. Knock yourself out. M coughed, nervous.
So, maybe there's a room, he said. Evan Marsh and Kylie Brandt are in it together. I can't tell you where it is, and I can't tell you how they got there.
He pointed to the laptop screen.
Kylie loves this movie star, and meets a guy who looks just like him, right?
Vega grabbed the line. She's a flirt, romantic, a boundary tester, she said. She's pissed at her mom. She's pretending she's a princess. She's pretending she's in a movie. Evan Marsh is nice to her. Maybe he flirts with her, makes her feel special. Maybe he's teasing her. Maybe he's stoned. He lights a cigarette and she sees a skull on his Zippo, just like the one the hero wears on a necklace in her favorite movie. She believes in signs, fate, love at first sight. All that shit a happy little girl believes in. Maybe he gets something from her. An email, a phone number, a way to communicate. Tells her he'll see her soon, but doesn't know where or when, exactly. Then he trails her from home, picks up her and her sister from a mall when Mom's shopping.
Why? Said Cap. Is he a pedophile? Any history of that?
Not that we are aware of, said Vega.
So what would be the motive here? What would make a 21, 22-year-old kid who's not a pedophile kidnap two girls, risk jail time, with a mother who's dying?
Cap had flashes of Marianne Marsh, her filmy eyes and drawn lips as she looked at the picture of her missing son.
"His mother," said Vega.
"What's the story with the mother?"
said Em.
"She's dying," said Vega. "Evan told me his mother didn't mind having cancer because it's the last thing Nolan gave her. He was a smoker."
"Oh, shit," said Em, covering his mouth. "That is some rough shit."
"Yes," said Vega.
"I bet he was pissed the police didn't do more,"
Em suggested.
"How do you know?" said Vega. Em threw his hands up.
"Missing adult? Rawls probably just checked the box. File the report, move on. We have some staffing issues,"
Em explained, "in that we are understaffed."
Cap asked,
"How pissed?"
"Hard to say," said Vega.
"Desperate?"
She nodded. "Maybe."
"His brother goes missing. Mom gets sick. Kid's life falls apart,"
narrated Cap.
"He stops going to school. Gets into some drugs," added Vega.
Em picked up,
"Somewhere he meets Kylie Brandt."
Cap continued,
"And he has an idea. Take the girl..."
"Or girls," said Vega. "Write an email to the police as ransom. Only instead of money, he wants them to find his brother."
"Then he sends us the email,"
said Cap,
"because the police aren't doing anything. Probably on a healthy dose of oxy to get rid of the anxiety." "But he's not a criminal, right?"
asked Em.
"He's just some druggie who made a shit ton of bad decisions."
Vega nodded at him.
"I would think so."
"If he has the girls, all we have to do is pull a thread," said Cap.
Vega's phone buzzed. She looked.
"That your guy?"
said Cap. "I got a home address. You know Cecilia Street?"
"Yeah,"
said Cap. He studied Em across the table. He hadn't aged much since that night the kid had died, since he had run to get Cap in the break room, looking like a chunky preteen nerd who'd just got spooked from playing the Bloody Mary game in the mirror. No gray hair, no wrinkles, still with the sweat rings under the arms, but there was something different now. Cap couldn't put his finger on it, but if he had to guess, it might have been the maturity of experience, knowing what was instinct and what was optimism.
"I'll go back to work," Em offered. "Try to get the original report on Nolan Marsh. See if we have anything on Evan."
"Good," said Cap. "Thanks, Emerson," said Vega. Em grinned and gave them two thumbs up. Chapter 9. It was called Bethlehem Hill, this area, but it felt pretty flat to Vega. Cap told her this was the Bethlehem coal mine before it closed in the 70s. When it was operational, the runoff would flow into the creek and powder the water black. And there you had it, Black Creek. Cap said some towns turned their old mines into museums, gave tours, and sold chips of anthracite on keychains. But Beth Coal had been abandoned and trashed after an underground fire was set by an arsonist around 1980. The surrounding roads caved and looked like they'd been suctioned with a giant vacuum from below. Every once in a while there'd be an item on the ballot to clean it all up, but there was always somewhere else to put the money. The streets within a couple miles radius consisted of mostly commercial properties, mini-malls and offices spread out about 100 feet from one another. The building they were looking for was only 2 floors, a dusty block of brick sticking up like a rotten tooth. Cap parked on the street. There was one other parked car, a beige compact under a carport behind the brick building. The sun was almost down. "Apartment 2, said Vega, reading from her phone.
"Gotta be up there," said Cap, pointing to the second floor.
Evan Marsh's apartment was above an eye doctor's office, a monument-style sign in front that read Bethlehem Eye Associates, along with the logo of an eye, wide open with lashes. The office was closed. Vega followed Cap to the stairs, metal and rattling under their feet. On the landing, Cap knocked hard on the door, and they waited. Vega put her ear to the door and heard nothing.
She leaned over the railing to look through a small window, and could see a part of a living room, a recliner and beanbag chair.